Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're continuing a series of shows that I'm hosting from the beautiful venue of Wintertime Nome, Alaska. We're recording right now in a very modern medical facility that is in Nome. Some of you, if you've been tuning into the show, you've heard me hosting shows from this very same venue. Across from me right now, a physician's assistant by the name of Nicole Thomas. Nicole, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you have one of the most fascinating backgrounds of anyone I've met yet, because you have deep roots in Alaska, right?
Mm-hmm.
Born in Anchorage, am I recalling correctly?
Yeah, I was born in Anchorage and then moved to Nome when I was one, I think. I don't remember.
Okay, fair enough. And you are Native.
Yes, my mother is actually originally from Koyuk, Alaska.
Okay.
And my father is Caucasian. He's originally from Washington.
Okay,
State.
From Washington State.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somehow, along your journey of life, you caught this vision that you wanted to be a healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, pretty early on, when I was in elementary school, initially I wanted to be a veterinarian, so I used to go over and help the veterinarians spay dogs and and neuter dogs when I was, I think, in fourth grade.
Okay.
But then when I saw my dad working as a physician assistant in Unalakleet when I was in sixth grade, that's when I decided that's what I wanted to do as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you pursued your training in a very unusual place. I've met a lot of Native Alaskans who've gotten training as healthcare professionals, and it seems most of them end up in the Pacific Northwest or in Anchorage. But you went where?
I went to Washington, D.C., to George Washington University.
Now, why did you go all the way out to Washington, D.C.? That's an interesting story.
Well, my childhood friend, her father's from that area. So she did her undergraduate degree there.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually in Oregon at the time. But I went to visit her for spring break, and I just loved it.
Okay.
I loved the diversity, and I loved the big city. I had never lived in a city before.
Okay.
So that was a big reason why I went. Also, George Washington University has one of the best physician assistant programs.
Mm-hmm.
And they accepted me, and I was excited to go.
Wow. Now, you have this cross-cultural perspective growing up. I mean, you're in Alaska, you're a Native Alaskan, your father's Caucasian, and you go out to get your training in a very cosmopolitan area of the country, Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Did that just stoke something? Because I heard some interesting things about your current lifestyle that I think are fascinating.
Well, being in Washington, D.C., I had friends from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really decided that I wanted to travel and see the world while I was there, because I met people from everywhere. And also, I worked in a clinic there for 4 years, and my patients were very international as well, from everywhere. So about a year and a half ago, I decided I wanted to travel, but living in D.C., I wasn't saving any money. And that's when I decided to come back to Alaska and work in the hospital here and save every penny. And that's what I did. And for the past 5 months, I've been traveling around South America, Europe, and Central America, too.
Now, that is amazing. So here you are. We're meeting at the Norton Sound Regional Hospital. And when I was introduced to you by one of the nurses, she said, well, you know, got to meet Nicole because she's traveling all around the world. And I'm thinking, well, you know, what does that mean? But really, it literally is all around the world. South America, you've been to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Asia may not seem as exotic here because it's just a few miles away, right?
Yeah.
Russia is right there over the Bering Sea. But are you interested in languages? Is it just cultures?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took Spanish classes for 2.5 weeks in Costa Rica, and then I did again. I took 1 week in Ecuador and 1 week in Mexico.
Wow.
And then I went to Italy after that. And now I'm studying Italian.
That's amazing. And so what does that do when you come back to your own cultural roots in Alaska? Has that changed your appreciation for your own
Oh,
culture?
definitely. Yeah, because when I was in Costa Rica and Ecuador, I was doing a lot of cultural tours too, and I became more interested in culture, and I realized, I feel like I don't know enough about my own
Isn't
culture.
that interesting?
And so now I do have this extra motivation to learn more about, my roots.
I think it's fascinating because some people, and I've seen this many times in Indian country, some people, it's not just an Indian country, it's any population that I deal with, we tend to take for granted the things that are most accessible.
Yeah, for sure. When I left to DC, at that time, I really did take for granted the beautiful place that I grew up in. When I came back 3 years later, after not being here at all for 3 years, I was like, wow, look at this place. It's amazing. And even, things like salmon. I grew up eating so much salmon all the time, all the time. Then in DC, I had to pay $20 to get some salmon at Whole Foods, and then I, really realized how fortunate I was to grow up here.
That's such a beautiful vision because I think one of the challenges that people are seeing across indigenous culture lines is people are attracted often to the high tech, the urban areas. There's this allure, there's jobs there, there's money when indigenous communities sometimes are depressed. And so people are leaving their roots, and often they don't have that connection that you're reconnecting with. Talk with us a little bit about, from this cross-cultural perspective now, Nicole, health behaviors, because there are some populations that are very healthy. I know there's populations, for example, in Costa Rica, they're some of the longest-lived people in the world. There's unique health challenges, though, everywhere, and especially here. Give us some insights.
Well, what I really, really enjoyed a lot in Costa Rica is having fresh fruit every morning, and amazing fruit too. And I was in Argentina as well, and every single day on my way home from, I was taking a teaching English as a foreign language certification. And on my way home, I would pass by this market. Every single day, I would pick up fresh fruits and vegetables because they were so beautiful and they were so good. And growing up here in Nome, I mean, yeah, we do have some, but we don't have the access that people there do have. So that was something that I really noticed.
Okay, so there's some opportunities here in Nome that you don't have in other places, but some challenges as well.
Yeah. I mean, sure, we do have fresh produce here, but it's nothing like what they have in Costa Rica. The fruit that I tasted there was unlike fruit that I've ever had before. I've eaten it in Nome, but it's different when you have it, so fresh and ripened the way that it's supposed to be.
Well, tell us about health behaviors. One of the things that I'm told, at least from the anthropologists, is that the American continents did not have distilled liquor before folks from Europe came to this continent. And, I know there's this close connection with Russia here in Alaska. Alcohol may have come from that direction as well, but this is a big issue in public health
Yeah,
circles.
it is, and it's actually something that I have taken a very great interest in over the past year, because I, growing up, I've seen a lot of my relatives, close relatives, struggle with alcoholism. And I've seen what it can do to families and what it can do to people. And I've seen so many of my patients here struggle with it. And I think that there is such a deficit in the access to care that they need as far as treatment. And I think, we really need to do a lot more screening for it and be a lot more aggressive with treating alcoholism because it's, an epidemic, and it's destroying a lot of lives.
So, as you've gone to different cultures, I know there are some cultures that use alcohol historically in moderation, and it seems that it's accepted in the culture. I know other populations, and many Native populations here in America, it doesn't seem like moderate alcohol use is something that most people can use.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think any culture and any place in the world has its problems with alcohol. But I think that here we definitely have a unique problem, and it's a lot more exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I talk to people from other places and I try to describe to them, you know, kind of how alcohol affects people here, I don't feel like they fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because it definitely has a much more profound effect on the people here.
You know, and I know some people think when we speak about alcohol in indigenous populations in the Americas, some people think we're looking down and we're saying that.
Not at all. Yeah. I feel like alcoholism is a disease just like anything else. And it's, you know, people can't help it if they're an alcoholic. And there shouldn't be any type of stigma attached to alcoholism.
So what kind of messaging should we be giving to here to Native Alaskans when it comes to alcohol in particular?
Well, I think that they need to be aware that there are things that we can do to help, and we have a lot of tools available to us. And, you know, I mean, it's still that there is more that we should have. I think we should have more alcoholism treatment centers like here. And I know that there's a long waiting list for treatment centers that are in Anchorage, or I'm not sure exactly, or Cotsiti, maybe. I know that there is a long waiting list, and I think we need more facilities. Like in Nome, we should have a treatment center here.
How about prevention? Is there, you know, primary prevention? Is there for young people growing up? Is there a message
that you try
to give?
Part of the prevention is treating the mothers and the fathers who have the, you know, children, because a lot of kids grow up with alcoholic parents here. And so kind of starting with the general population and treating, you know, as many people as we can is a good place to start.
Okay, how about the big picture then? Going back, other issues that you've become more sensitive to as you've traveled around the world?
Well, I am a big advocate for fitness. You know, I exercise regularly myself, and I feel like exercise is the answer to a lot of different problems, including, you know, problems with sleep or problems with depression or anxiety. And, you know, pretty much any chronic disease you could think of, being it, you know, diabetes, heart disease, cancer.
No question.
And arthritis, you know, you have bad knees because you're too heavy and things like that. So that's another thing that I am very, I guess you could say, passionate about with my patients.
So a patient that comes in to see Nicole Thomas as their physician's assistant, as their primary caregiver, it's likely they're going to get an exercise prescription.
Yeah, I do talk about exercise a lot with my patients and encourage them to even, you know, whether it's just starting with 10 minutes a day, it's better than nothing. And once you start with 10 minutes a day, you start to build momentum and you start to get into routine and you start to feel better and you go from there.
I love that message. That's a message I love to give, because people sometimes put the barriers so high that they never do it.
Right.
But giving them permission to do a little bit and do it on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
How about your cultural heritage as a Alaskan Native? Was exercise something that you're realizing as part of your cultural heritage?
It is, you know, with our summer activities. I mean, always with my family, you know, we're out in the summer hiking, berry picking, and always active.
Very good. Well, you're an inspiration. You're someone who's tasted the world, but you say, I want to come back home, and yet there's still a lot of the world I want to see.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'll you know, that's my plan. I'm going to be back working off and on between traveling for a while, I think.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your enthusiasm with us, Nicole. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Nicole has to run, but we've got other great guests coming up on today's edition of American Indian Living. You'll want to join us because we've got more from Nome, Alaska, more fascinating insights into health. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
My name is Florence AQ. For lunch today, I had grilled chicken and squash. I am Zuni Indian, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
My name is D. Dakota Denesosi. I turned the TV off and took my nieces and nephews for a walk. We saw two jackrabbits, an eagle, and zero cartoons. I'm from the Dene Nation, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
Science has proven that if we lose as little as 10 pounds by walking briskly for 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and make healthier food choices, we can prevent diabetes.
My name is Barbara Akisakpuk-Curtis. I'm losing weight and being more active. I am Alaskan Inupiaq Eskimo, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
For more information on how to prevent diabetes, talk to your health care provider. For free materials, call the National Diabetes Education Program at 1-800-438-5383 and ask for the power to prevent diabetes. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You are back with Dr. David DeRose on today's edition of American Indian Living. Unfortunately, that was actually our last segment, at least our last usable segment, recorded from Nome, Alaska during 2015. We had another great guest who was designed to wind up that show, but technical problems in the field will not allow us to air that interview. So at the risk of losing that first great interview, we decided to keep it and include some interviews that we recorded at previous meetings of the National Congress of American Indians. So our program today will wind up with some interviews recorded previously at NCAI conferences. Hopefully you enjoy this mix of things from throughout Native America. Without any other introduction, here we go, rolling some tapes from previous interviews at the National Congress of American Indians. With me right now, sitting across from me at the table here at the recording area in the exhibit hall, is Randy Noka. Randy is a councilman with the Narragansett tribe in the Northeast. Randy, thanks for squeezing some time out of your busy schedule here at NCAI.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Many people with the tribes out east, especially the Northeast, I mean, throughout Indian country, you're a familiar face. I know when I lived in New York and New England, it seemed that I'd be in different tribal gatherings, and you were there involved, Randy. I know you have a deep interest in governance issues as well as health. What do you see happening in Indian country, especially in your neck of the woods, as far as health opportunities and challenges?
Well, it's a great opportunity now for Native nations with the overall concerns for the well-being of the members. I think it goes along with the nation, as we have right now, First Lady Obama and the health care initiatives that she's involved with. It speaks well of hopefully an overview of America getting in better shape physically, and then certainly more specific to Indian country, which, as you indicated, I do have a concern and a keen interest. It's good to have these opportunities, be it at tribal clinics or health programs or the financial opportunities that tribes have that, in the end, can provide better health opportunities for our members. I know everyone should have a concern about their well-being, but, you know, in Indian country specifically, you know, the diabetes has always been a problem. Mm-hmm. Things as such, you know, the diets of Native people, the rural settings of some of the reservations and the proximity to the Indian healthcare facilities. You know, there could be hours and hundreds of miles between where they live and where the clinic is or the hospital. And So it goes without saying that a lot of things have to start within the home. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it's easy, because Indian diets, it's maybe in the Southwest and not the stereotype that's region, but you know that sometimes we all have to work at how healthy our diet is, I guess, and some of the fried foods and things as such, the flour products that, you know, we may have as staples to our diets, but we have to watch things.
And, no, I mean, it's a good point, Randy, and I think, you know, you mentioned some of the things that may be a part of Native American diets now that weren't before European contact. You know, you mentioned the grain products and the fried products, and, you know, to many people's minds, you know, fry bread comes to mind. And yet that really, although it may be looked at as a traditional Native American food today, it wasn't before Europeans came. And so I think a lot of these issues of really restoring some of the traditional foods are very powerful. Is that a movement that you see taking hold in the Northeast? Do you see a lot of interest in that area?
Well, I guess I'm more aware of my tribe in particular. Uh-huh. And I know our health people, the clinic that we have on the res, you know, there's a lot of outreach efforts to better educate or have more involvement with the tribal members as far as health and well-being, exercise programs or, you know, diet programs that may be sent out to the tribal members' homes or you know, opportunities to participate in things at the clinic during a visit with the doctor or whatever the case may be. So I do think there's a renewed interest or an enlightenment that maybe years back, not that long ago, wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But you know, it still remains a concern, and you know, diabetes and dialysis and things as such that, you know, go hand in hand with better health or hopefully getting better health. There's a number of tribal members that come to mind. My mother-in-law, she was on dialysis for over 20 years.
Really?
Wow. Oh, yeah. You know, so it goes without saying that, you know, there's a lot that still needs to be done to get us hopefully in better health.
Yeah, I know with a lot of the challenges that we deal with, we see the end results, and many people don't think about how the choices we make early in life affect what happens to us later in life. Yes, there's genetic factors, and your mother-in-law obviously did a lot right, because most people, once they're on dialysis, don't live for 20 years. So she obviously was committed to really taking care of her health and doing the best she could once she had the problems with her kidneys.
Yeah, it's sad, but, you know, we're coming up on the anniversary of her passing tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's a tough lady, a lover, and well-respected within the tribe. Like, you know, my parents and uh-huh. You know, we have that we can fall back on, you know. But, yeah, she did what she could, and from what I know about it, that's unusual. Mm-hmm. To be on dialysis that long. And so it speaks well of her and what she had to do, what she had to overcome on a daily basis or weekly basis. But, you know, more power to her, and you know, and hopefully we can all learn from that. The health and what comes to mind also is, you know, the alcohol and the substance abuse and mm-hmm. things like that. That I know personally, not to pat myself on this, but I'm alcohol and drug free, and I
Tremendous.
I take great solace in that and pride. But at the same time, I know it's just, you know, it's only a little bit. It's a step away. It's a slip away mm-hmm. from being back into whatever world that, you know, a lot of Native people and people in general try to get away from, you know, that substance and alcohol abuse. And, you know, Indian people, unfortunately, there's a stereotype that Hollywood or some have portrayed that, you know, alcohol and being a Native American go hand in hand, and that's not the truth.
That's right.
You know, there may be a problem that some folks have, but it's no more obvious or part of our culture necessarily than anyone else. It may get more notoriety, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, by some that want to stereotype, but hopefully that, you know, be it tribal nations, tribal governments, or just in of ourselves. We do what we have to do to make ourselves more healthy, a better person, and hopefully an example, a positive example for others.
Randy, I always appreciate it when tribal leaders do speak openly about alcohol and substance abuse. I know sometimes in Native American settings, we don't want to talk about it because of these stereotypes that are out there. And yet, when someone like yourself says, look it, you know, I'm alcohol-free, I'm substance-free, and I'm proud of that, you're really championing a lifestyle that younger tribal members or people actually across the age range can take inspiration in that. It's not something that goes along with being a Native American, like you said.
It isn't. It's not part of our culture. As we know in history, may not necessarily reflect correctly on this, but it was brought over with the Europeans.
That's right.
The alcohol, and but yet we're the ones that are pigeonholed or stereotyped as being the abusers and all, and it's not fair to my people. It's not right, and it's no more of our history than any or less of a history than, you know, I hate to do this, but the Irish people or the Italian people, mm-hmm. or anyone else, mm-hmm. any ethnicity, it's no more a part of our culture than it is theirs. But yet, it's common, I suppose, the misconception of, oh, yeah, you know, the Native American and the alcohol or substance abuse. On the other hand, there is the concerns on some reservations that there is the abuse being mm-hmm. done. The health of Native American, violence against Native American women. You know, as a tribal leader, as a tribal person, you know, our focus is the reservation in our members, and hopefully we can make a difference to their betterment, whatever it is that they're going through. And if it's alcohol or substance abuse, hopefully we can curtail that, or making sure that our people are safe on the reservation or wherever they mm-hmm. live, be it on the res or off the res. You know, that has to remain our focus, and just keeping an eye on it, just making sure it's part of our ongoing efforts will make a definite difference and a positive difference.
Well, Randy, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We've just got about a minute left in this segment, and I know there's a lot of things we could have talked about, but any other things you'd like to leave our listeners with before you have to slip away?
Well, and I appreciate the opportunity again. If anyone has a misunderstanding or desires some more enlightenment, then it's just a phone call, an email away to be at a reservation that may be nearby, or mm-hmm. outreach to a tribal official to whatever degree. I think collectively, Indian country, all the battles that we have on a daily basis, be it political or whatever the case may be, it's only an outreach away to get better understanding and maybe a better appreciation of what we go through as a people.
Tremendous. Yeah, so no matter who's tuning into the show, whether you're living on the res, whether you're in an urban area, whether you're not a Native American at all and wondering about some of these issues, take Randy up on his encouragement. Make sure you connect with local sources of information, local health resources, local information sources, and because sometimes the most destructive thing are the myths that we tell ourselves, isn't it?
The history books leave a lot to be desired for what really happened to my ancestors.
Randy Noka, he's a tribal leader with the Narragansett tribe in the Northeast. He's taken time out of his schedule to join us at NCAI in Portland, Oregon. We've got a lot more to come in today's edition of American Indian Living. More voices throughout Indian country speaking about some of the opportunities and challenges in the area of health. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
I'm Karen, and two very important people in my life, my husband and my father, have been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is a type of irregular heartbeat. People with AFib are 5 times more likely to have a stroke than people without AFib. Talk with a healthcare professional today about your risk and learn how to manage AFib to prevent a stroke. Visit stroke.org/AFib to learn more.
Did you know that 63% of homes contain allergens from cockroaches? And that mice spread potent asthma triggers found in 82% of homes? It's true. Common household pests are major offenders on the list of indoor allergens. Learn what you can do to help your family breathe easier. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're here at the National Congress of American Indians in Portland, Oregon. It's November of 2011 as we're recording this show, and we're speaking with Native American leaders throughout Indian country here in this venue. With me now at our studio in the exhibit hall is Alma Ransom. Alma has been a tribal chief. She's been very active in Native American health issues throughout Indian country, and she's taken a special interest in some health initiatives at this point in her life. It's great to have you with us, Alma.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
We've had a good sampling of people throughout Indian country and the programs that we've been doing here, Alma, and I think you're my first guest from what would be New York State. You're part of the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. It's great to have you on the show.
Okay. I guess I better answer. I'm nodding, and that doesn't count.
That's right, not when you're on the radio.
Yeah, no.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's exciting in your part of the country.
Well, the battle against the diabetes is ongoing. Mm-hmm. The young people are paying attention, and they see results of what's happening to their parents and relatives, and you hear concerns about what not to eat. That's very encouraging.
That's
like
incredible.
You see young children say, I'm not having French fries because it's not good for me, and I think that's great.
That
you know,
is.
I don't know where it's coming from, but it's very encouraging, and we have young people that are concerned about good eating food. Mm-hmm. You know, I know traditionally we like fried bread and we like all kinds of things that I guess probably not good for us, but we like it. Anyway, the young people that they're not eating junk food, and the school systems like where we come from, the border is right there, so we have schools on both sides of the border, and our children attend anything they want. And in that cafeteria, I know the Canadian schools have, it's a buffet style, and the salad bar is about maybe less than 2 feet off the ground. The little kids are just perfect. It's for them. And they have this very cute-looking salad bar. You got to bend way down to get it yourself, you know. But these little guys, it's perfect for them. And they've gotten used to it. They know about cut-up carrots and stuff like that. And it's, you can't believe you're seeing this. The kids are helping themselves to the lettuces and all this stuff.
Tremendous.
Yeah. They're hungry, but they're eating that as well. Uh-huh. They'll eat that first and then go to stuff themselves with whatever, you know. But the salad is getting there. Fresh stuff is getting there. And it's wonderful to see. It didn't take long at all for them to convert and like it, because I think it's this table style that really they love it. It's their own little salad area, and it's working quite well. And I mean, an initiative like that really is paying off.
Well, it's exciting to hear that kind of progress.
Yeah. And they changed. I mean, the other schools, we have many schools on the reservation, and they use that as well, and it once that kicked in, they followed suit, you know. And it's one of my daughters used to be the cook there, and she said, you wouldn't believe how those kids took it as their own because of the size of this salad bar.
Wow, that's a great idea. I've never seen or heard anything like that. That's definitely something other tribes or other health centers could use.
It's amazing. This little stuff came from Canada, and it's great. Stainless steel. It looks just like any salad bar you'd go into, and it's little things. It's great. Yeah.
So now, was this a tribal initiative, or is that the Canadian government that was doing that for all kids, or is this more a school that's especially for tribal members?
It's Indian issue, you know, and that these people get around and they see things like, well, industry, you know, the kitchen industry, and they learn things and they bring it back and buy it and use it.
That is just great.
It's unreal how well it kicked in because it's their own. Uh-huh. It's like a playhouse.
I love the idea.
Yeah,
I just love it.
That is something. So
I know you folks are doing other innovative things with health. You're just like bringing the salad bar down to the level of the little kids. You're also bringing exercise options and tribal health resources into other places where you're kind of creating in your community, on your reservation, places that are kind of healthy areas, if you will. To tell us about that.
Well, we have the senior citizen center. Mm-hmm. It's called Where We Meet, Jidetawadatkus, Where We Meet. And they serve, every day they serve good food, diet-type food. Mm-hmm. It's good. And it's monitored how much, and it's Meals on Wheels, except they come to the center to eat. Mm-hmm. And also they can take a lunch home, especially people that live alone. And otherwise, they'll go home and eat junk food, you know.
Right.
And they take a special kind of soup and sandwiches. And it's amazing. It's being made like mom made it for you, so it's good to eat, you know. And that's one of the things. And, of course, the buses run off into both sides of the reservation, Canada and U.S. They come to eat, and then they go shopping. And it's the best time of their life, I hope. That's what it's doing. I'm not looking forward to it, but it's the best we can do for them.
No, that's wonderful.
And they have outside very recently. The thought about our good health is there in everybody's mind. They've invested the casinos. You know, when people complain about the casinos, call it down, you know, it's so sinful. It does an awful lot of good for Indians. Mm. It's here where we're able to get the state-of-the-art stuff for the senior citizens, and we have new walkways that cost thousands and thousands to make the road out of area that was nobody wanted. It's like swamp, and they built the roads in there. And
like walking trails.
Yes, now walking trail, and right next to it is a big field for the youth to play. The elders watch them play. There are all kinds of games, and there's play area for the kids to play in the, well, big slides, big swings, big, you know, very industrial type thing, not breakable.
Right,
you know?
Right.
While the adults are out walking around the trails.
That is great. One of the concerns that we've featured on this show before are people who say, look, we want our kids exercising more, but the problem is simply this. They actually don't have a safe place to exercise. But you're helping to address that. I mean, they can go out in the athletic field, they can walk the trails, and the families can be out there together. The parents can be walking, or the grandparents, and the kids can be playing on the field.
Yes, while the children are practicing soccer or lacrosse, field lacrosse, you have the grandparents who watch them and can walk around in the meantime. And it's very nice. It's all fenced in. It's like, I mean, nobody ever went there before. It's kind of a swampy area, and it's built right up. And I think certain times of the day, I've never seen bikes, but the trail looks so darn good. Bikes could go there too, you know. Yeah.
So you've got this facility now. It's got the athletic options. It's got the walking option. But you're also building a new tribal health center. Is that right there?
A wellness center. Yeah, wellness center. We're a specific building. The ground is already broken. We had the area set aside, the land set aside, right next to this facility where all the machines are going to be in there for therapeutic and all kinds of exercise things. And in there will be cooking classes.
Good.
And people will learn how to cook. Well, it's one thing to be thrown into the kitchen when you don't know how. You know, it's useless to have pretty pots you don't know how to cook. Anyway, they cook. They help them cook, and you know, there's economics too. You can cook things that can go together, and save some things for the next day. They're teaching them all this stuff and substitute items for. Let off on the salt a little bit, and what is greasy and not good for you. They have these chefs that come in there, for dietitians come in there, and that's why we have. That's how it is in another building right now. But it's going to be all under one roof, and the exercise and a lot of training.
Personal trainers.
Yeah. It's going to stop right at the door of dialysis. We're not going to have dialysis there. This is the escape that we're going to have so that people don't have to go to dialysis.
Alma, it's such a powerful message because as a physician, I know what you're talking about is true and I know it works. I mean, we've seen people have their blood sugars, their blood pressure come down with these changes, and it's lifestyle that's the foundation. So we're here, you know, getting all kinds of messages here at the National Congress, announcements coming over the speakers. But as we sit here and talk together, the important message that's coming through loud and clear is really look at this. We've got opportunities in Indian country to make a difference. And the Mohawks are standing up to the plate. You're saying, look, we're investing in tribal health. But it's not giving more monies to doctors. It's not setting up dialysis units. It's trying to avoid those things with a healthy lifestyle.
We have our Indian doctors there that are very happy because all these developments have... I mean, they've been talking about this all their professional life, and people weren't listening, but they do now.
Yeah.
And they're reaping the results of good, healthy people, as they're not watching them die and be helpless, you know. And it's really quite nice. The epidemic of diabetes is so entrenched, you know. It's just there, and every family has it, just like the drugs. Everybody has it, you know. And so,
yeah, I mean, it's encouraging what we're hearing coming out of the Mohawk Nation in New York and into Canada. We're talking with Alma Ransom. We've got more to come up in this edition of American Indian Living. Again, we're recording this show at the National Congress of American Indians in Portland, Oregon. It's November 2011 as we're recording the show, and we'll be back with our final segment in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
What I say, you already know, but you don't believe. You won't accept, you don't conceive. When you're inside your car, you feel safest of all. Are you safe? Are you? 2 tons of sheet metal in your hands. 2 tons don't run on autopilot. You have a mission. It's no collision. Hold the phone. Don't text. You're angling to be next. Oh, you've done it before. What's the harm? Just this once, there's no alarm. Got your hands on the wheel? No big deal. Brothers and sisters, you won't see it coming. You're off the road. Your life explodes. It's not worth it. Don't do it. You only think there's nothing to it. Put it down. Hang up. Pay attention to highway action. Behind the wheel, there is no such thing as a small distraction. Join the conversation at DecideToDrive.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who would rather help keep your bones strong than put them back together.
We are here to say a word about cancer.
When you talk to someone who has been diagnosed with cancer,
be positive.
Be supportive.
That's it. Stop right there.
Don't start telling them about your Uncle Vern.
Or the next door neighbor.
Don't be grim.
Try not to disappear either.
Don't cross to the other side of the street.
Don't stop calling.
Don't cry.
Don't ever say, you're living my worst nightmare.
You know who you are.
Here's the important part.
Be positive.
Be positive.
Sé positivo.
Say these words.
You will do great.
Keep calling.
Check in.
Be a friend.
Or be a new friend.
Be a supportive.
Positive friend.
Smile.
Try not to be afraid.
Or act afraid.
Fear is not useful.
Be a funny, hopeful human being.
If you come across cancer,
let it transform you into your most positive self.
And inspire.
Urge.
Fortify.
Rally.
Encourage someone to do great.
This message brought to you by Cancer Survivors.
For more information, to hear stories, or share your own, visit DoGreatCampaign.com. Do great.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to the National Congress of American Indians and American Indian Living. We're recording today's show at the National Congress being held November of 2011 in Portland, Oregon. Alma Ransom has been my guest in the previous segment. She's still here with me because she's got some very exciting things that she's been doing right here at the Congress. I know, Alma, I've seen some other tribal leaders have come by, one of them in particular earlier today, and because Native Ministries of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is partnering with Roche Diagnostics and doing some cholesterol and blood sugar testing, you've been making that known, and people are getting excited about it. Tell us just what you're doing here to get the word out.
Well, I usually stand at the door and get them from the various offices to get them checked for diabetes or blood work, and I just tell them my story. My whole family is diabetic, and most of them have died. Mm. And I don't have it, and I'm healthy. So my mother, in the end, told me, he says, you have an obligation to help. Mm. There's a reason why you're not sick like the rest of us, you know. So I have. But here at the Congress, like you mentioned, the Seventh-day Adventist and Roche, they're here to help people with the diabetes and right equipment and probably medication. I don't go into that, you know. But I bring people out here to get tested. It's a wonderful feeling to find out just how bad your system is, and it's even twice as good when you find out you have nothing wrong.
Right.
So it's good to know either way. Uh-huh. If it's bad, you take care of it. Early in the morning, they at the National Congress, they have the caucuses. Mm-hmm. And I'm there before they open, before 7 in the morning, and I talk to I'm kind of well known here, and they allow me to speak at the caucuses, and I invite people to come and get tested and ask any questions about diabetes. I don't have all the answers, but I know where to get the answers if I get bad ones, you know. And so I encourage people to come, bring their friends, and get tested over and over to make sure they're good before they leave here. I've had practically total strangers come back up to me and thank me. Uh-huh. You know, I don't even remember, I'm sorry to say, from maybe the last function and say, I want to thank you for making me go, because I'm fine. I'm maintaining. Even mm-hmm. if it's maintaining, mm-hmm. it's still, I made them go, you know. You know, if an old lady like me can be good, you can be good too. You're young.
Well, you have that power of persuasion, yeah. Alma. And you have a powerful story, too. You've shared with me before just what's happened in your own life because you got motivated to really take charge of your health.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I went to Oklahoma to get our, you know, and we learned the things not to eat mm-hmm. and... we were close, but it really took us over to be perfectly, eating perfectly, you
okay.
know.
Uh-huh.
Like in our tradition, of course, we've had corn, the squashes and beans. It was there, but we didn't eat it as much as we should have.
Okay.
And we do now.
Good for
so
you.
So the beans is something that we're... and certain types of corn that we're eating all the uh-huh. time, but the beans is the biggest kicker here. And what can I say? Other people are listening. I go on a radio. We uh-huh. have a powerful radio station on the res, and I get on that radio and talk about that experience and the fact that people can be a little bit better off even though they're diabetic mm-hmm. with the right foods and stuff. And people come up and say, what did you really say? And then I would translate it.
Uh-huh.
I would translate it. And then as a matter of fact, on the radio, that's what I do.
Oh, okay.
I would translate it to make sure they thoroughly understand. And there's an option there. People can call in to uh-huh. explain things more in a certain area. And I do that because I've seen people so bad, like lose your family, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it's too late to do anything, you know, it's tough. So I'm doing everything I can as long as I can. Yeah.
No, I so appreciate, Alma, the message about the beans, because like you mentioned, whether you're in the Northeast, as you come from, whether you're in the Southwest, I mean, throughout many tribal communities, those three sisters have been extolled, the corn, the beans, the
yeah.
squash. And what we see in the medical research literature is you eat more of those beans, the blood sugar gets better, the cholesterol
yeah.
tends to come
yeah.
down. And I think it's amazing when you think about it, the wisdom that was in the traditional Native American cultures.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew that these were special foods,
mm-hmm.
didn't they?
But for us to be able to learn how important it is to have that, we had it all along, liked it, but not emphasized like we do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, in any, we make sure that that is what we're eating. And you know, when you're the only chef in the house and you put something on the table, people might not like it, but I appreciate it when they don't put their nose up and they eat it because
uh-huh.
they know it's good for them. You know, that means a lot that we're trying to help them and they know it's for their own good,
mm-hmm.
so they eat it.
And it's amazing how when you eat those things that at first don't taste palatable, if you stick with it, you often start to enjoy it, don't you?
Well, you can have it a million ways. You can prepare the thing a million ways. And of course, maybe our error is in the things we eat with it, you know, is where the things go awry. But the majority of the time, we're eating the right stuff. And we're healthy, you know. Oh, my husband and I both went, and it wouldn't have done any good if only one of us went.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming home, then fight at the table what we're not going to eat. We know better, so we're eating the right stuff at the same time, you know.
Well, it's an exciting experience. I've worked at a number of residential centers. Of course, I worked at the center you're speaking of,
yeah.
the Lifestyle Center of America, for a number of years. Unfortunately, that facility no longer operates. But there are other facilities throughout the country that do the same thing. They help people really focus
right.
on their lifestyle, on their health.
Uh-huh.
And I know more and more tribes are saying, look, we don't need to send people to some distant state or region. We can do some of those things right in our own tribal environment. And I assume that's what part of the vision for your wellness center is, isn't it?
Well, yes. Like this senior citizens that we have at home, they come and eat the stuff, and they don't complain saying the food's no good.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a good reason that they're feeding us certain stuff, and I appreciate it, and it's come around. The people are accepting it more and more. And the clinic that we have on the reservation have been barking about this a long time, but now it's kicking in.
That's great. It's great. It's great when you put your energies into something and you actually see it come to fruition.
Yes.
And I know many times in life it feels like we're competing
yes.
with other interests. I mean,
yeah,
right now,
right.
I don't know how it's coming over the radio, but we're competing with some of the loudspeakers
sure.
in the exhibit
yes.
hall. But
oh.
but the message still gets through, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
if we're persistent, if we're focused on getting a message out, mm-hmm. it can get through. And your experience there in the Mohawk Nation is really testimony to that.
We have staff in the clinic. I mean, the clinic is no longer an aspirin dispensary, you know. It's awesome.
Good.
We have a lot of doctors and nurses and dietitians and therapists, all kinds of stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
And various drug and alcohol program that's mm-hmm. state of the art.
Excellent.
And that doesn't mean we're the best at it, but we're prepared to repair.
Tremendous.
You know, and it's great.
Well, Elma, it's been great to have you on the show. Unfortunately, our time has escaped us, but it's always great to catch your enthusiasm. I think most of the years that I've been at NCAI, you've been gracious enough to take time out of your very busy and pressing schedule to join us on the radio show. And not only do I appreciate it, I know that our listeners do. So that was Elma Ransom from the Mohawk Nation. You've heard, again, some great guests today on American Indian Living from the National Congress of American Indians. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Hopefully today's program has helped you catch a better vision for what's happening in Indian country, things you can do for your own health and for the health of your people in your own home and throughout your community. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.